Songezo Mabhece on The Viewpoint.
21:07 is the time on The Viewpoint this evening, the 9th of May. Good evening for those who have just joined us. Songezo Mabhece together with the production team welcome you. We haven't changed this segment, so important it is, and that's the Hashtag Health on Monday segment. And the discussion this evening with Mr. Barry Kegginson, the CEO of Aurea Senior Living, is Population Health Management, an in-depth look into how purpose and meaning contributes to well-being, especially in later life. Take it away, Barry. What are we talking about when we talk about population health management and its link in terms of purpose and meaning contributing to the well-being of our senior citizens?
Yeah, thanks very much. It's a very interesting topic, and quite a lot of insights have been gathered from numerous research exercises that have been done overseas. So really, what does purpose in life mean with regards to older people, and how do they cultivate this? And really, what purpose in life is having goals, a sense of direction, a feeling that there is meaning to life, both present and past. And this sense of purpose in life has been associated with positive health outcomes among older adults. And that would talk about fewer chronic health conditions, less disability, less reliance on medications, and longer lifespans. And that's really the researched impact of the benefits of having that sense of life purpose. The strongest characteristics of medium and high purpose in life include social support, resilience, reliance on faith, so that could be some sort of religious or spiritual belief, high health literacy, meaning people who are aware of their own health situation and are able to manage it, and of course a good health status. So individuals with medium and high perceived purpose in life demonstrated actually significantly lower health care utilization, in other words, lower hospital visits and lower visits to doctors, et cetera, and expenditures, so that would be expenditures on their own health care. They experienced increased preventive service compliance. In other words, that they were more active in managing their own health. And they also experienced what they perceived to be higher quality of life. So purpose in life certainly strongly associated in the elderly with improved medical and physical health outcomes. And that's very important when looking at the health of the older population, because obviously any interventions that can improve or maintain these levels of purpose over time can promote healthy and successful aging. And I think that's the important point here.
So in a nutshell, what would you then define as the purpose for life or purpose in life? I mean, for me listening, I heard you pretty much advocate for what many probably would have heard many times before, and that's just to lead a healthy lifestyle. But it's a lot more nuanced when one talks about purpose in life. Perhaps you can spend a bit of time elaborating on that.
Yeah, sure. So really, purpose in life talks about meaningful activities, a sense of achievement, being able to continually develop and achieve goals which one sets for oneself, and really just having an active life both physically and cognitively. I think these all contribute to people's measure of their own purpose in life and a strong sense of purpose in life. And this purpose is very strongly also associated with resilience and social support. And this is thought to help to buffer stress and to help people cope with life changes and challenges, and of course give people an increased sense of value in their life.
Can we talk about the challenges, inherent challenges to that? Many South Africans, and for the most part the majority of South Africans, would love to do and to experience and to live the sort of life for which you are advocating through the purpose in life. They want to be healthy. People want to eat right. People want to exercise. People want to enjoy their time spending it on things that they enjoy. Hobbies becoming work, if you like. But many are simply faced with such abrasive elements in life that it's all about survival and not about living. That is a serious challenge that manifests in later life, where somebody cannot lead a retired life with any sense of dignity. And I mean, we don't need to go very far to know or see this happening in this country on the increase more than it is on the decrease in South Africa.
Yeah, I think that's an issue not only in South Africa, but indeed globally. And certainly as Aura Senior Living, we advocate people moving into senior living communities as a proactive measure. And that assists in various aspects of life which would contribute to their well-being. So, for example, being able to live some kind of with peace of mind. So, in other words, somewhere where security is taken care of, where you know that there is care and support available for you, where there are conveniences of daily living provided for you. So that would be some kind of, you know, food, catering, offering, et cetera, et cetera, as well as numerous activities for social interaction. And also having various activities and interventions that promote that sense of purpose. And that would be opportunities for learning and opportunities to set and achieve goals, mm-hmm. And that type of thing. So, you know, the way that we as Aura Senior Living certainly would advocate, and anyone in the senior living industry would advocate, for people to move into these communities sooner rather than later, because that would address a lot of the issues that you, I think, alluded to, be it isolation, be it lack of opportunities to exercise or to socialize, et cetera. And these are some of the advantages of living in well-run senior living communities or retirement villages, as they're often known, or any type of environment appropriate for older people, where they're not living on their own, where they have access to support, where they have access to amenities, where they have access to a social life or community of like-minded people, where they have mm-hmm. access to care and support, at least proactively or reactively. So I think these are all important considerations as people get older.
But of course, it is a consideration that only those with the means to effect these considerations to being a reality have. The majority of South Africans, back to my initial point, is that this is probably for many a bridge too far. How then do we, excuse the pun, bridge that gap?
I think it's a very important point that you raise. I don't think it's particular to South Africa. So, for example, in the U.S., they refer to this as exactly the point you raised. They refer to this as the missing middle. In other words, how does one service or how does one provide these opportunities to people of lesser financial means? I think it's possibly what you're saying. And this is a problem globally. And I think the answer to that lies in some form of social support from government. We see certain countries like, I'll give an example of New Zealand, that provide excellent means-tested support to elderly people, such as those who need it would obtain the requisite assistance from the state to be able to take advantage of facilities such as this, and those who are more able to self-fund these things would be self-funding them. So, you know, there are these models in various countries in the world. Unfortunately, for Africa, we don't have necessarily a broad access to these type of facilities. And I must say that South Africa is not alone in this. I mean, there are a lot of countries, the US, for example, is one, where there's a similar dynamic. The government doesn't have extensive social support programs for elderly people to be in these kind of communities. And I don't necessarily have the solution for it, but I think you raise an excellent point, and it's something people need to be aware of and hopefully move towards some sort of a change and some sort of pressure to make these facilities, or at least to assist people in some way in getting the services and the care that they need as they approach their later years. So your point is 100% correct. Unfortunately, I don't have the solution.
No, I'm with you, and we're exploring ideas.
But you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
For sure. Let's explore these ideas because, for instance, in many African and certainly Asian communities, the intergenerational living in one house, partly tradition, partly culture, partly simply by circumstance, where you find that if I'm a parent and I have a wife, my kids, myself and my wife, together with either of one of our parents, or sometimes even both, are living in one estate under one roof. The social benefits to that, particularly for the grandparents and the grandchildren, is good, because those relationships, even scientifically, are proven to yield benefits. Of course, it might be a strain to the middle generation, my wife and I, but there are benefits to that. Now, if that would be implemented on a sort of industrial scale, let's call it, where, for instance, the Dutch model is linked to social concessions, where young people, particularly of university going age, are linked to senior living spaces, and in fact some instances live there, where the quid pro quo for them boarding and accessing food at little to no cost to them would be to spend an X amount of time per day with the senior citizen. That curbs, among the other things, the sense of loneliness, running chores, assisting with exercise, and just ensuring that society takes care of its aged. And the very young person who is getting these concessions in exchange for time, only 30, 40 years later, is the recipient of that very favor, with a generation not yet born when he implements it, but when he or she is at that age, is a beneficiary thereof. How practical would that sort of model be then, if it were to be implemented in South Africa?
Well, I think there are a number of different models, as you say. I think what is important to note is the cultural aspect of it, and the cultural practice, if I can call it that. And I'll use not South Africa, but I'll use India as an example. So what's happened in the last, call it 10 years in India, is previously what had happened in this exact example, as you mentioned here, would be the older generation would live with the younger generation, possibly in the same, most times in the same property, and that situation would be fairly prevalent. But what's happened in India, as an example, in the last 10 years, is that the growth of purposeful senior living communities has permeated quite rapidly. And the reason for this is that all of a sudden now you have but I would say in the last 20 years or 30 years, you have couples where both the husband and the wife are out at work all day, and it's no longer all that practical to have the parent living in the house. And that culture slowly over the past 10 years or so in India has changed. And the reason for that is that it does deal some of the issues, as you say, but it doesn't deal all of them. So, for example, during the day, if the children are out and the grandchildren are at school, what does that person do sitting at home all day? You know, how are their needs catered for? Mm. That's the social, let's call it that for now. The other one is the aspect of care, in that the family are not always able to recognize and deal with changes in care needs. Now, the statistics are that about 40% of older adults over the age of 85 years need assistance with two or more activities of daily living. Activities of daily living being, you know, medication management or assistance with meals or dressing or, you know, whatever it is. And often, you know, these needs aren't static, so they change over time. And families aren't necessarily able to address these care needs, or even understand what the specific needs are of their parents. So from a care and support perspective, it may seem like it works, but it may not be the best solution. And then I think culturally it's also changing to recognize that, you know, socially, is this the best thing for my parents? So I think there's a number of different models, and they all have their pros and cons. I'm just giving an alternative view of that intergenerational type of living that you suggested. It certainly has a place. But I think what we're seeing in certain countries is that even that mindset is changing to a degree.
Well, certainly you are driving a strong case for senior living, and perhaps let's go there, because there are many who might feel that whilst, for all the reasons you have stated and many more that you probably might still, is a good thing, it is challenged probably in many African communities or spaces as at variance with Ubuntu. How do you, when your parent is most vulnerable and beyond her strength, as it were, for all the times she has toiled for you as the child, do you then let her off at a place that is divorced from her family, that is divorced from her environment and familiarity? In other words, the cultural challenge to senior living. What perhaps has been the experience of those who might have fallen prey to the cultural challenge, but nonetheless went on to live in senior living spaces like Oria is, that has had a benefit that perhaps might not have been contemplated before, but for some of the reasons you have listed has yielded good returns for a dignified quality of life in your later years?
I think your last couple of words there are the critical thing. So the perception really has been for some time, and it's not only in South Africa, by the way, this is globally. The perception, I would call it the old senior living space, what people used to call old age homes. The perception is that it's a last resort type of thing. You go there when there's no option, and you're somehow pushed into it or forced into it, and that's the feeling that a lot of people have. But the truth of the matter is, modern senior living communities are environments which are incredibly appealing to older people and are actually a life enhancement and not a degradation in any living arrangements or in your day-to-day environment. So it's certainly a positive and something that people, when they understand it and when they see it, they should opt for that rather than living in their current environment, because for a number of reasons, they are far better off in these places, are actually very attractive living environments and are socially vibrant, etc. So why should people consider these environments? Firstly, there's this what we call hassle-free living. So everything that you do is everything that you need to do on a day-to-day basis is taken care of, and people can focus on, and what we say, people should can focus on what they want to do rather than what they have to do. And I think in your senior years is very important. The other thing is the feeling of being part of the community and having access to social interaction on a day-to-day basis. And that's critical as one gets older. It's been demonstrated that social interaction is critical in preventing or slowing cognitive decline. And, of course, I think everyone knows that the prevalence of dementia as the population ages is increasing substantially. So anything that can assist in that day-to-day feeling of well-being, again, and purpose in life of having that social environment and that social interaction is critical. And that's something you can't really get in an environment outside of the senior living community. And then lastly is the, again, and this also goes to the well-being, the aspect of well-being, is that peace of mind of knowing that you are in an environment where if your needs change, if your care or support needs change, not only is that change noticed by the people around you, but it can be addressed. And it can be addressed quickly and by people that you know within the community that you know and trust, and at a cost that can be, that is also not, that is probably determined up front. So these are some of the reasons why people should be considering moving to these senior living environments, is that it's what we call a continuing care community. In other words, there are different ways of living. There's independent living, assisted living, and there's a care environment. But at the end of the day, everyone's needs are addressed and there's no reason to move anywhere else. And a lot of the services, as I'm saying, that you will get there, that people would get there, are very difficult to replicate in a traditional residential environment, living with your children, et cetera, et cetera. So these are just some of the reasons why people should move into senior living communities, and why the general practice, I guess, in most of the world now is a move towards these environments as a best practice rather than living at home with your family.
Let's talk about the gold mine they remain senior citizens. I mean, just because they're old, it doesn't necessarily reflect the state of their minds. I mean, if you can go to a lot of traditional universities in this country and the world over, global examples being necessary, you find many professors in their 70s, sometimes 80s, the odd 90-year-old functioning. Of course, their pace might be a little slower than typical, but they still contribute meaningfully to societies. And I'm asking this question in relation to senior living environments, how society can yield and tap into their experience, their voices, their skills. Is there a way perhaps that you think society can make better use of the elderly precisely because it takes, or it adds rather, to their purpose in life, even at that stage?
Yeah, definitely. So, I think that's an important point. So that's exactly why we don't talk about retirement. We talk about senior living. If you look in the dictionary under the word retirement, the definition is actually to withdraw from service. So that's exactly what you're saying. People shouldn't be withdrawing from service just because they're a certain age. living in a senior living community means that you are living in an environment that is appropriate to your needs at that time of your life. It doesn't mean that you must cease your profession. It doesn't mean that you should not be of service to people. It doesn't mean that you can't add value to society. So within our communities, we've got practicing doctors, we've got politicians who have columns in the Sunday Times, and we have generals in the Defence Force, all still active and all still working and all still contributing to society. So we have artists, we have musicians, we have all sorts of people, judges. So this old notion that the moment you go into retirement that you're no longer contributing professionally is just not true. And that's why we kind of stay away from that word retirement, that perception of withdrawing from service. It's not true, and it's not true of old people, and shouldn't be true of old people. So your point is exactly right, that people still certainly have a contribution to make as long as they're able to do so, and they should be encouraged to do so, and that should be a benefit to society.
Let me read a message, and for those who want to quickly make a call, please do. Johannesburg 714-2006. Send us a message, as the one I'm about to read from Jane in Cape Town suggests. 0614-104-107. Very pertinent topic, Jane says. Hello, thank you for your pertinent topic. I'm now classified as a senior citizen receiving SASSA. Right now, all I want is a reasonably sized space, not a cell, to spend the rest of my years. There is an extreme shortage of social housing for SASSA pensioners. There is a 17-year waiting list for government senior social housing in Cape Town alone. Right now, they are only processing applications of 2004. And perhaps Jane is taking us back to the point where if one's means do not allow, and clearly government has a backlog, what other ways can this sort of dignified senior living, what other arrangements are there? In other words, what is outside your business and the offering that you have there, Barry, is available for people who might fit in the category of Jane?
Yeah, so there are various non-governmental senior living communities out there. I think you mentioned that Jane is in Cape Town. I am aware of a few in Cape Town where they are not state organizations, but certainly public benefit organizations that do provide affordable accommodation and care for older adults. And I think one must just research where and what those organizations are. Of course, I don't really want to mention who they are on this forum, but they certainly are there. So they're not state, they're not state organizations, and they're not strictly speaking for-profit operators either. But they are they do provide excellent services, and they are in the public benefit space, and they are out there. So I would encourage people to research those. There are some very good options, particularly in the Western Cape that I'm aware of, or in the Cape, in fact, countrywide. There are quite a few of them. So, yes, of course, there is a shortage. I mean, we can't deny that. But there also aren't none of them. So I think people should just make themselves aware of where these are and pursue those.
Very well. Thank you. Thank you very much indeed, Barry Kegginson, CEO of Oria Senior Living, for engaging us about the benefits of communal living in the age that otherwise would classify or qualify for retirement. Of course, that word is not used in the Oria space. It's living only beyond a certain age. This is Purpose in Life, Population Health Management. This was then, ladies and gentlemen, the Health on Monday feature, talking about leading a healthy lifestyle all the way into your vintage years. The time is 21:31. After this very short ad break, we go to #TopScholar, a focus in what's happening in South African universities and schools, broadly speaking, the education setup. And our guest after this very short break is Mr.